You're listening to the Hockey 411 podcast with your host, Brian Anderson. Hello and welcome to the Hockey 411 podcast presented by SeatGeek. Use the code THEHOCKEY411 for $20 off your first purchase. We're talking Boston Bruins this week. Yes, that's right. We teased it a couple weeks ago. We're finally talking Boston Bruins for the first time on the show. Skyler from Stanley Cup of Chowda is on the pod. Skyler, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. And I'm glad to finally bring you the Boston Bruins content that you so desperately crave.
Honestly, we've had a little bit of trouble finding writers. I've reached out to about, I don't know how many different people. I've tried networking in the city of Boston. It's been really difficult. So to have one land and come on the show is fantastic. Let's start off with this team this year. Because when we previewed the season, we were kind of like, I don't know, is this team going to make the playoffs? Like, are they a bubble team? Are they the Bruins we know and love? You know, is Jeremy Swayman the holdout contract? When is he going to sign? You know, obviously you have the midseason firing, which we're going to get into here. But what have your thoughts kind of been as this year has unfolded so far?
I had two ways in my head that this could go. The first way was they would be kind of lesser than they were last year, but they'd still be roughly the same team. They'd have excellent goaltending. They'd have great team defense, and they'd get a lot of scoring from their depth alongside guys like Brad Marchand and David Pastrnak. The other thing that could potentially happen was something happens with the goaltending. Junas Korpisalo doesn't work out. Elias Lindholm doesn't turn into the number one center that he probably should have been. And the rest of the lineup just sort of fizzles out. And this has gone so much worse than I could have possibly imagined. Just how it's not that that they've struggled. I'm fine with a team that struggles. It's that it has been frequently catastrophic in a way that makes everyone who contributed to the creation of this team look bad. And yeah, it's been a complete, I bet you the reason that you've been struggling so much to get people in the city to talk to you right now is just because it takes up so much of your brain power to talk about and think about why this team has collapsed in terms of like overall effectiveness as dramatically as they have. It's been a very frustrating and very confusing season. There's a lot of people picking through the wreckage, you know what I mean? So yeah, it's not been a good year at all.
I do know what you're meaning, and it kind of got brought to light when Montgomery got fired. When Montgomery got fired, my eyes really went like, whoa, what's really going on here? You bring in Joe Sacco, and look, there's a lot of pressure on Cam Neely and Don Sweeney to put this team together. And look, it's a flawed roster. Let's not kid ourselves. There were a question mark on our preseason show, and so far we've kind of hit it on the head, sadly. If you're a Bruins fan, you're like, I hate that you're right about this. But you know, let's talk about this firing here, because Jim Montgomery had one of the best records as an NHL coach in Boston to let go. I mean, he was so above 500. It was crazy. If we're just doing it on a win-loss record, now you're a little slow out of the gate. Your goaltender comes in late into camp. You're still lacking that, you know, elite center. Maybe the bottom six is still a little bit of a jumble, but you're working on it. Jim Montgomery is someone you want to play for. When you listen to him speak about the game, how to motivate guys, you know, just connecting on a human to human level, it's fantastic. I'm always blown away every time I can sit and listen to him and just hear him out on it. Then you bring in Joe Sacco. You know, we got this little bump here, but it kind of seems like the plays, you know, you lose to Winnipeg in that fashion. It was like, okay, let's see where this kind of goes here. Like, we're starting to see maybe they're coming back down after that new hire bump, but what did you think of the firing? Because it kind of felt like someone had to fall on the sword and it was Jim Montgomery.
That's about accurate, I think. Jim Montgomery had a very mixed reputation in Boston because he had this extremely strong regular season record, but this is Boston. The expectation is championships. It's playoff success. And for the most part, Jim Montgomery didn't really translate in the postseason. Part of that is that, you know, in that first winningest season of all time and all that, they get this great record. They lose a couple of key players in going directly into the playoffs and they completely blow it. And that becomes the entire, that's the only thing that anyone remembers about that season, in spite of the fact they were so dominant. And then that sort of follows the coach around. And as they moved into the next season, one of the things that you said, you know, this was a team that was very much a question mark. We were all kind of expecting that shoe to drop after Patrice Bergeron retired. We were all expecting that they were going to have this massive drop in effectiveness. They were going to have a lot of trouble creating offense. And one of the things that he did to create that offense is line blend. He line blended a lot. That became like the hallmark of the Jim Montgomery roster was there were four lines, but you never knew who was ever going to be on them in between shifts. And that worked for an entire year, and it got them through a round of the playoffs. But now, with the issues beginning to mount, and they haven't really, at least in my opinion, addressed the real concerns on the roster, and also a brand new issue happened, which is individual players on the defense have just not played even close to the standard expected of a Boston Bruin. You can't line blend your way out of that. There was a thing that he said prior to his firing within the last four or five games of his firing, where he said that you can't plan around not having any juice. And whenever the Boston Bruins lose games like this or have lost games like this, as mad as it made everyone to hear that, because like, you're the coach, you're supposed to know how to motivate these players to do this. You can't ask him to tell these players who have been playing hockey for decades at this point to not take dumb penalties, to be in position. You can't ask these players to play as weirdly passive as a Boston Bruins team can sometimes play. And you got to hit the net. He can't do anything about that. So he did have to go, I think, at some point. Someone had to fall on the sword. And because of the record of success overall that Cam Neely and Don Sweeney have, I think they have been granted the rest of the season to potentially make things better. But in a competitive market like Boston, you need to be good all the time. Otherwise, the knives come out for you quickly.
I think the biggest thing that kind of did Montgomery, and like I said, it totally took me for a loop. It's, you know, getting a save when you need it. And some of the defensive zone stuff, like you look below the dots in your own zone and you talk about being passive. There were times where the defense is just, you know, you're not having two guys on a puck. You're just kind of throwing it around. Like there's little details like that that you notice during that in the beginning part of the year. And you're like, oh, wow. Like, okay, maybe this defense needs to, you know, figure it out here. There were times where you'd get hemmed in. You're like, okay. And then all of a sudden, boom, the puck's in the back of your net. Like, oh, wow. Like structurally, maybe we need to change a little bit here. Do I think it was Montgomery's time to go? I really don't, because at the same time, when you talk about roster blending and line blending, well, you can only get so much juice out of the same orange at so many times. Like you said it perfectly. And these are the tools I have to work with here. I'm going to try and mix and match as many times as I can to get the right combo. And if it's the tools aren't there, like you said, it's just not going to work. So I think it's a lot of it is on management here for giving him the weapons to go out and do something with it. And you know, I want to start with the offseason additions, and I want to talk about Elias Lindholm and then Nikita Zadorov, because I like Nikita Zadorov. I know he was fantastic in Vancouver. I liked him in Calgary. He's not the fastest guy, but man, if you get lined up in the corner, you're dead. Like, I'm sorry, you're going to get sent into tomorrow, and that's it. Like, you're not going to come, you're going to go back to the bench feeling it. And, you know, I know he's taken a lot of heat from Boston fans. Would I have given him the contract? Maybe not, but I still like him on my team. I still want him in a top six role. Maybe increase him into that fourth defenseman thing. He's not a real top two guy, but he can play solid minutes for you and lay the boom. I'm fine with that. I know he's taking a lot of heat, and there have been some plays where like, okay, like let's not just throw the puck like that. And then Elias Lindholm. We were talking before the show. I think the way we're going to describe it is he's raised present in class. He's just kind of there right now. I mean, 13 points in 30 games as of this recording. Defensively, I thought he's been fine. He's been good supporting in the corners. But outside of that, like, I do need a little bit of offensive instinct. I know we haven't seen that from him in a little bit. Like, I saw him kind of struggle to get that offense going in Vancouver. But if you're getting signed to this deal and you're expected to be the 1B center on this team, I need more. I can't have 3 goals out of my guy getting a long-term deal.
You will find no argument from me. Between the two of the offseason additions, I like Zadorov more. I think part of the reason that Zadorov has been on everyone's, I don't know how PG-13 I can be here, but hit lists, let's call it with an S, is that Nikita Zadorov is a perfectly physical, imposing player, but he's a little reckless about it. And early on in the season, their penalty kill was miserable, just miserable. It was almost automatic that they were going to give up a goal. And him throwing one really stupid penalty a game basically meant that you were going to start the game down 1-0. You just didn't know when. But otherwise, he's metastasized into an otherwise perfectly reasonable player. I do agree. I think his ceiling is probably as a middle pairing guy, but you absolutely could bring him up a pairing, and I don't think that would hurt anyone necessarily. There are certainly players on that defense that I'd love to see moved down all the way to the main Mariners, because I'm just so frustrated with how they're playing. Nikita Zadorov is not one of those players. Now, Elias Lindholm was a bet on Don Sweeney's part based on reputation rather than on impact. And I think we can see that this season has bored that out as a bad bet, because the expectation was, you know, the Boston Bruins have always had a defense first, really good 200-foot center as their number one for a long, 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 long time. And if they can find another one, then they'll be gravy. Now, Elias Lindholm was that kind of player back 4, 5, 6 years ago when he was on Calgary, but then he had a pretty precipitous drop off in terms of on ice effectiveness. Now, he was fine in Vancouver, but a big part of why was that he was boosted by some truly elite winger talent. His on ice impact, his metrics did not look good at all. So the bet was that, well, if we can get him with David Pastrnak and Pavel Zacha and a number of different players who have played very well under Jim Montgomery, then maybe we can get that bump again. And the Bruins tend to have at least one good year with the guys that they bring in. Unfortunately, it seems like we're out of Bruins bumps for the year. It looks like we spent it all on fourth liners, which I don't know if I'd have done that, but yeah, he's been fine defensively. He's been a very up and down when it comes to offense. He can be a great assister, a great playmaker, but otherwise he just doesn't have the offensive instincts right now to really, really be a game maker, a really game changing player. And he's been, between the two of them, the most frustrating, because at least for me, Zadorov has always been a guy who was shown up to be what he wanted to be. Hard hitting, bruising, probably going to spend 2 to 3 trips to the penalty box. That's fine. Lindholm has just only ever really brought penalty killing acumen. And given how that went to start the year, I'm a little concerned about how this contract is going to play out over the course of the next couple of years.
Look, with Zadorov too, like, we talk about him going to the box, there have definitely been some question marks with passes. As a personal note here, watching him in the neutral zone, it's like, hey man, like, don't force it there. There's a way. The forward's right behind that guy. That happens once or twice, but that naturally happens with a lot of defensemen. You know, you just don't see guys, but it happened enough for me when I was watching the tape on this team. It's like, oh, okay, let's dial it back here a little bit. But still, someone I want on my team. You know, I know the Rangers had a lot of issues with Jacob Trouba, but at the end of the day, he's a guy I want on my team because of the physicality. It's the same thing with Tom Wilson, someone that can just keep protect guys, do the basic needs in the defensive zone, et cetera, et cetera. Elias Lindholm, I think you really hit on the head, because his underlying metrics were just okay in Vancouver. You know, you definitely saw a dip year over year as it's kind of long. Like, obviously, when he was on a line with Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Tkachuk, like, unbelievable offensive player, was the guy to, you know, in the neutral zone, go help the defenseman on the regroup and then really go help down low behind the dots. This year in Boston, like you said, he's been solid defensively. I've had no issue with that. It's when you have a historically good 200-foot guy and you're paying him like that, you got to get up in the play a little bit more. You got to push the pace. And look, when you're riding with Brad Marchand, who's a great winger historically, I think he's starting to get a little older. I think we're starting to see maybe...
He had three surgeries this year. So, like, he showed up hobbled. So he was going to struggle no matter what. And apparently David Pasternak had some sort of injury that he told the Czech newspaper about on his hand. So this guy who shoots all the time is sitting there wincing after every shot. So he has to kind of cool it and play in a different way than he's traditionally had to. So it leaves Lindholm either having to be the guy on the doorstep, which I don't think he can really do at this moment, or he has to be far more involved in the play, which historically he hasn't been. And that leaves this a hobbled captain who built his reputation on, you know, being kind of a bit of a rat to actively play hockey like a normal person instead of like a sociopath. And David Pasternak, who really only had a few specific roles that he needed to play at any given time, he now has to play the role of, I am the straw that stirs the drink. I am the guy who has to create space. I am the guy who has to make the passes. I am the guy who has to create offense, not just through a shot. And so that's sort of created this weird milieu in the top six where a bunch of different hands don't quite know what the other hand is doing. And it's been really frustrating as a result.
It really has been. And, you know, you hit a lot of the points I was literally just about to say. And
sorry to catch you.
No, you're OK. That's why we have the guest on. That's why we have the expert on. But when you can't have good supporting wingers for a guy that is historically needed, you know, a good, you know, Batman to my Robin, it's just not going to work. Like I said, I love the defense. I love the back end, backside, you know, defensive side of the puck in the neutral zone. It's just taking that next step because this offense is dying for a goal scorer. And, you know, it's funny because he's got 13 points in 30 games. Another guy that has 13 points in 30 games, but it feels like he's got a completely different perception on him is Pavel Zacha. I feel a lot more positive with Pavel Zacha's game plan. Like, he's got 7 goals. Like, he's finishing. He's the guy who's kind of hanging around the net a little bit more. Maybe he's not being as defensively responsible, but as a center, I've seen him enough in the D-zone go support where I'm like, okay, I can live with that. But there's just a little bit more of a positive perception of Pavel Zacha. He's kind of playing a good 3-zone game right now, and he's got 7 goals. Like, if you can continue to contribute like that and be defensively responsible as a center, you're golden. And for a guy that, you know, I know when they got him from New Jersey historically, like, New Jersey fans are ready to run him out of town. So when you have him now, I'm very happy with Pavel Zacha's game.
I'm pretty happy with Pavel Zacha's game. It's picked up considerably after a pretty cold November. A big part of it is that when it comes to overtime play, which they've gone to more often, the combination of him and David Pasternak right now is unbeatable. There is just sort of this psychic link where they're able to take the players on the ice and just move them wherever they need to create a golden scoring chance. And I think he's done a much better job overall. Every Bruin who's a forward right now shares a little responsibility for what happened here. And I will be honest, he didn't start great. His October wasn't great. His November wasn't all that better. But now that he's picked up his game, now that he's had a couple of really important confidence boosting games, I would like to see him continue that. I have no care, especially with this road trip that they're on, there's no guarantee but your own effort that decides whether or not that's true. But yeah, he's been very strong. I'm very glad that the New Jersey Devils gave him to us, but as I hear, they've actually turned out okay. So I think it's the best of both worlds for both the team that he came from and for the team that he came to. And of course, for Pavel himself. I do need him to score more, though, especially considering the struggles that this team has had. Because, I mean, it can't just be Brad Marchand and David Pasternak, man, because outside of this, it's getting pretty bleak that
a number of fourth liners still have a place in the top 10 in Bruins scoring this year, that needs to change. As good as that fourth line started the year, that needs to change.
It absolutely does. And, you know, your goal scoring leader is at 11. Pavel Zacha's at 7. But it's amazing how a couple good weeks and a couple clutch goals can really change a perception. Like I said, it feels like somewhat of the exact same player, but the perception on Lindholm is a negative one from the fans. And then you look at Pavel Zacha and you're like, hey, he's picking up his game. Like, I feel good about this player right now. He's playing good three zones right now. So I got to throw in some positive stuff in here. And another guy I want to talk about here is Justin Brezzo, a guy who has brought the power forward back to Boston, it feels like. He's someone that has, you know, we talk about Zadorov imposing your will on guys. That's what he is. He's a big dude. He is well over 6 foot, and he is a hefty man and someone that is a spark plug. And when you're kind of going through this up and down cycle, this little bit of a rut, you're like, okay, like, how do we get through this? You need guys like that. You need guys that are just constantly going to move their feet on the forecheck. Especially it's a chip and chase kind of thing. I got to go in the corner. Boom, I'm going to take a body out, and then I'll have my F2 come in and grab the puck. Like, it's that mindset of I need to kill and survive. And that's what he's doing right now. And it's really nice to see, because it's, I don't know, the last couple of years I felt like I've wanted more out of power forwards in Boston. And this is kind of just like, wow, this is really someone who's playing desperate hockey. And obviously he's got 14 points this year. I know he's a -3, but obviously plus minus is a relative stat.
He's been a phenomenal player. Justin Brazo has had a wonderful ascent to the NHL. One of the things that a scout said about him very early on is that when he joins the league, he needs a year to adjust, but once he adjusts, he thrives. And you can sort of see that throughout his history. He was in the ECHL, kind of struggled. Then he really, really picked up his game. And then he moved to the AHL and he struggled a year. Then he really picked up his game. He got it. He got used to it. And then he thrived. And then he joined the Toronto Maple Leafs for a little bit and he thrived. And now the Boston Bruins just get to take the fruits of a player who is big, more than willing to use that big, and comfortable. Because I think that's the issue that a lot of these power forwards in Boston have had, is that Montgomery's system was not really conducive to power forward hockey. It was more freewheeling, high flying, far more interested in creating offense off of both transition and also through fast cycling, which a power forward can do. You just got to be a talented one, and all the talented ones don't go when Justin Brazo goes. So him finally finding a niche with this team is gigantic. He's third in points on the team right now, and he's earned every last one of them. I'm super happy with the way that he's played coming into the last couple of weeks. And I think my favorite part is that he uses his big in the way that's useful, because there's a lot of guys in the NHL who are just cardio merchants. They just show up, they get into board battles and then they lose them. But then they get into another board battle and they lose them again. They're in the thick of it, but they don't make anything of it. Justin Brazo doesn't do that. He finds ways to the puck. He manages to pull the puck out of bodies. He creates possession through his physicality. And more than anything, for a power forward like him, I want to see more of that. He is probably one of the most effective Bruins in terms of general on ice impact right now. And that's surprising, but I'm very happy about it. I could not be happier about how he's playing.
He's the guy I want on my F1. Like I said, on the forecheck, chip and chase, he's the F1 I want, because he's going to go and just kind of create chaos below the goal line, you know, make that defenseman think. And when you get a defenseman start thinking, sometimes there's a little bit of panic setting in. It's like, I got to get rid of the puck. I got to chip and chase. And all of a sudden, boom, it's a turnover 2-on-1 in front of the net. I can't not tell you how many times through youth hockey to the minors to the NHL that happens. Yes, pros will kind of sit there. I'd love to see them more patient. But there are times where it's just like, let me get it off my hot potato stick. And then, boom, it ends up in the back of the net. And guys like that who can put their nose to the grindstone, just keep their feet moving, are perfect because they can play up and down your lineup too. And ideally, he's a middle six guy, right? But he can, if the top line, Zaka's really struggling, Pasternak's totally struggling, boom, throw him up there for a shift or two, see if they can get their feet moving, just kind of get them into the game. And you need players like that. You need guys like that. And, you know, the guy who's got to make all these decisions now, I know we talked about Jim Montgomery at the beginning of the show. We're going to bring a full circle here. We're going to wrap it up with this here. Joe Sacco comes in. Is he the long-term future for this team? I know we've seen a little bit of a bump. I personally haven't seen too much of a scheme change. I know he's trying to keep it simple. I know certain details have changed within the game, but is he really the long-term thought process here? I don't know. That's why we're asking you.
Boy, what a good question. I think he's good for what they need him to be right now. I do expect that they're going to go take a look at what's available at the end of the year. It all depends on how the rest of the season plays out. Because, yeah, he's doing a lot of the same things. He's running a lot of the same schemes, a lot of the same lines, even though the only real change is that they don't change mid-game. It's kind of hard to say because, you know, the issues that they had were just so catastrophic and so bombastic that you almost wonder, well, like, was it just a... Oh, was it just an issue of messaging? Did they need a guy who was going to yell at them more, or did they just need like a wake up call and the rest of the season's going to be perfectly fine? But I do feel like with how bad it started, they're going to be looking at every option because, like it or not, this team loves competing. They love being in the playoffs and they will do whatever it takes to get there again. So if it looks like that they are struggling in any way, shape, or form to get there with an Atlantic division that I believe the technical term for it is ass, they will be, I think they'll get their first round playoff dates, but I don't know if they're going to go much farther beyond that, especially if they get someone like Washington or, God forbid, Toronto right now, because... there's a lot that this team needs to do to get people back on their side, especially after that Winnipeg game, which just there was a lot of people getting a very hard wake up call as to what the limit of this team actually is. And I think he needs to prove something over this next couple of weeks as to what this team really is under Sacco, because otherwise, I imagine that they're going to be on the coaching market come almost the day after the season ends.
The hardest job in the league right now is either Don Sweetie, Cam Neely, or Joe Sacco, because these guys are really on the hot seat. They have to produce, and to come in midway through a year and try and change the systems, change the culture, it's difficult to do it on the fly. You don't get a lot of practice time, get a lot of morning skates, and it's just not enough to get guys to really change. So, you know, like I said, you get that bump, guys are kind of a little bit more motivated, but to make impactful and meaningful change to systems, to that room, that's an off-season thing. It's really difficult to go into a room and change and just totally throw out the power play and let's try it all again. Like, it's not going to work like that. It's really difficult at any level of hockey that you try and coach. We're going to wrap it up here. Skyler, thank you so much for joining the show. We'll give you a couple minutes to plug your work and where the fans can find you.
You can follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Sky On Air. And you can, as always, check us out over at Stanley Cup of Chowder. We do game threads, we do previews, and we do recaps of the game, and we do analysis when I get the opportunity to sit down and actually write it out. So come on over. We have a really vibrant community. Vox hasn't killed us yet. And we will live far beyond it. So come on over, continue to make our community the best Boston Bruins community you can.
Thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. To catch all the latest, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at The Hockey 411. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.